turboprops. They're escaping the puddle jumper stigma. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. We've been talking lately on Aero News about forecasts into 2008. One of the trends that we've been watching is regional transport aircraft and turboprops, both which seem to be really hot right now. Ray Jarowski is a senior aerospace analyst with Forecast International, which has been watching these trends into the future for industrial and government clients. Ray, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul.
First of all, let me ask you about Forecast International. Give us a little background on the organization and who uses your data.
Sure. We are a privately owned company that provides, as you said, market research and intelligence for the aerospace industry. And our main specialty is providing production forecasts for all types of aircraft, as well as other aerospace and defense-related products. We've been in business since 1973, so next year will be our 35th year of operation. We have a diverse worldwide client base that numbers in the thousands, and these clients include everyone from prime manufacturers to subcontractors, financial houses, consulting organizations, military services, government organizations, the media, universities, and the list goes on and on.
Well, now, if I understand correctly, this information would be used. I understand how it would be used by manufacturers because they want to know, you know, should I buy copper futures if I'm going to have to wire more planes next year, or should I hire more people, or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But is this used competitively as well by manufacturers?
Oh, certainly. They like to keep an eye on what their competitors are doing and how well their products are supposed to be doing. And we provide an independent third-party outlook on the market that they find very useful.
Now, in terms of government use of this information, governments, I would think, just kind of exist in their own little isolated world. Do I have that wrong? I mean, do they need to know what the trends are in order to plan what they're doing?
Well, they occasionally use us to consult on various research projects. For instance, the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, recently used us as a consultant for a report they were preparing on the new very light jet segment in business aviation.
Well, let me ask you about how this information is gathered, because I think this is kind of a black art to a lot of people who just read the press releases or the news stories. How do you go about gathering this data, and how reliable is it?
Well, our methodology is based on both qualitative and quantitative analysis. Our staff of analysts here includes experts from a wide variety of disciplines. For instance, in putting together an aircraft forecast, we have input not only from analysts who cover the aircraft manufacturers, but we also have experts who specialize in the aircraft engine market or the commercial avionics market. We also have experts who cover economic and geopolitical factors. Now, pumped into this brew is also various statistical data, such as air traffic trends, load factors, airline profitability, and so on. And we gather this information from a wide variety of sources, the trade press, company financial papers, government documents, and so on. But some of the best and most timely information that we receive actually comes from our own clients, who provide us with a very valuable two-way flow of information. To the accuracy of our forecasts, I can't give you the exact figures, but I can say the accuracy of our near-term aircraft forecasts is consistently in the high 90s. That is around 97 to 99% accurate.
That's remarkable. A lot of different industries have third parties that provide a pool of information which would not be appropriate to share on the phone with another direct competitor. In other words, it provides a mechanism for sharing information which either for regulatory reasons or just pure competitive reasons wouldn't be appropriate to share directly.
Right. Well, the suppliers probably find us of the most use because they get the forecasts from the OEMs, you know, the original platform manufacturers, and those tend to be on the sunny side. Our products are going to sell, you know, for years and years to come, et cetera. So they use us as kind of an independent eye on the market and to give them a little bit more realistic viewpoint on where the market is headed and how well a particular product could sell.
Let's talk specifically, Ray, about this story that came out in a press release from you guys on December 10th, which was that there is a turboprop resurgence underway.
Right.
This is kind of fascinating to me. I kind of saw an inkling of this a few weeks earlier when the Bombardier Q400 was having that problem in Scandinavian Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a lot of media, general media coverage of the story, and people were being interviewed who were frequent flyers about the Q400. And it dawned on me that most of them really, really liked the aircraft.
Yes.
That they found it comfortable and convenient and quiet, and in every sense they liked it. Is the turboprop class in general escaping this puddle jumper stigma that people seem to have applied to it over the years?
Well, one factor is, as you already touched on, the modern turboprops are not the noisy machines that they were in the past. In the past, airline passengers would much rather have preferred to fly on quieter jets than turboprops, and you still find that a bit, but they are much more quieter, and it's a more comfortable flight than in the turboprops of olden times, so to speak. But as far in general, as far as this revival of market interest in turboprops, I think a number of factors work in combination. These factors would include the continuing growth in air traffic, combined with rising fuel prices, and also a need on the part of regional carriers to cut costs and reduce fares in the face of competition from the low fare carriers. Regional jets are much less fuel efficient and far more costly to operate than our turboprops. So in the present environment, many carriers are adding turboprop aircraft to their fleets, and other carriers that have traditionally operated 30-seat and 50-seat turboprops are still sticking with turboprops as they move up to 70-seat aircraft.
It's become somewhat of a strategic chess game in a number of ways. I know Continental announced a few days ago that they're going to start operating Q400s for routes within 500 miles of Newark because they may offer some tactical advantages in terms of being able to use shorter runways and so forth and avoid congestion.
Exactly. It should be noted that the trend is still much more pronounced in Europe than in North America. The reasons for this is varied. The low fare competition is much more intense over there. Europe also generally has shorter stage lengths, which makes the region more geographically conducive to using turboprops. You would prefer a jet on a longer route. And finally, in Europe, regional jets are saddled with stringent landing fees and emissions fees that turboprops aren't. But even in North America, and the Continental move is one of the signs, you are seeing a resurgence of interest in props. Bombardier has so far been the beneficiary of the North American revival, but ATR is looking to gain a share of the U.S. market with its recent launch of improved Dash 600 versions of its ATR 42 and 72 turboprops.
We're talking today with Ray Jurowski, who is a senior aerospace analyst with Forecast International, about a resurgence in turboprops. And we'll be back to talk about it more in a moment. I'm Paul Platt. You're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Platt with Ray Jurowski, who is a senior aerospace analyst with Forecast International. And we're talking about Forecast International's recent forecast that things are looking rosy for the turboprop market. Ray, we've talked a little bit about how turboprops are better in some applications than jets are. Let's talk a little more specifically about their advantages. We've talked about cost savings and fuel savings. One of the things I see happening as a trend here is that airlines, even in places like the U.S. where environmental regulation isn't yet as tight as it is in Europe, seem to be looking to the image benefits of being green. Do you see anything in your research so far, Ray, that suggests that airlines are seeing this as a benefit in a public relations sense, or is it pretty much driven strictly by the numbers on the spreadsheet?
Well, right now it's the numbers on the spreadsheet. However, as you touched on, environmental factors, the so-called green campaigns, are much more of a factor among the European public and in European politics. So that would be much more of a factor over there. However, that time is certainly coming in North America, though we're not quite there yet. So it could become a factor in the calculations of North American carriers.
All right. You mentioned Bombardier as being having reaped the benefits of having stayed in the sector.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get the sense that that was a strategic decision, or did it just kind of happen by default and they're in a place that they're now very happy with?
Well, I'm sure it was a strategic decision, both on their part and on ATR's part. Both of those companies stayed in the regional turboprop business, while many of their competitors, names such as BAE and Fokker and Saab, dropped out several years back. So ATR and Bombardier are both now reaping the rewards of their perseverance and staying in the market.
Are we likely to see any bigger planes in this segment? I know you mentioned the 90 to 120 seat class for regional jets.
Right.
Are turboprops likely to make an impact in that market?
Well, the largest turboprops from both ATR and Bombardier are right now the 70-seaters, the Q400 and the ATR-72. Both companies are looking at possible 90-seat turboprop models, but they haven't officially launched development of them yet, and they're still studying possible market reaction to such designs. Right now, it's still a little too early to calculate such models into our forecasts. A lot will depend on the continuing trends in air traffic growth, plus what fuel prices do in the future. That will be a big factor as to how long this turboprop resurgence will continue.
Is there anything that prevents turboprops from being scaled up that you're aware of? I mean, is it just their image as being primarily limited to shorter routes that makes them the size they are now? Could they easily be scaled up?
They could certainly be scaled up to 90 seats. There shouldn't be any problem with that.
Now, you mentioned that there are pilot contract terms which are limiting 90-seat regional jets or 90-seat and larger regional jets.
Right. What you're referring to are called scope clauses, and the existence of scope clauses in the contracts of pilots of major airlines limit the number and size of aircraft that the regional airline partners can operate. In most such clauses, the current maximum size aircraft that's allowed is 70 or 76 seats. There are one or two exceptions to that, but that's generally the norm. Now, if the 90-seat market is to truly reach its full potential, these scope clauses will have to be eased to the point that 90-seaters are generally allowed. There was a time not too long ago when 70-seaters were barred under the clauses, but what happened was financial and competitive pressures forced the pilot unions to give in on the issue. Eventually, the same thing can be expected to happen with 90-seaters, but we're still probably a number of years away from that. In the meantime, though, we can expect to see 90-seat and larger regional aircraft to be bought in volume by independent regionals that aren't impacted by scope clauses, also by low-fare carriers, and even some major carriers may start to add some of the larger regional jets to their fleets.
Is this an attempt by the pilot unions to, I guess, draw a line in the sand between regional jets and smaller 737s, for example?
Exactly. The pilots of what the industry calls large commercial transports, that's generally 737s on up, they are paid much more than the pilots of regional aircraft. And it's exactly that. It's an attempt to draw a line in the sand between the salary level of the pilots of the larger transports and the salary level of the pilots of regional aircraft.
Well, it would seem to me that the most direct pressure would be on companies that fly the smaller planes. The companies would lose business if they couldn't respond to the marketplace. How does this pressure trickle down to the pilots' union?
Well, what happens is if a particular carrier is losing money and they need to operate more efficiently, they can essentially force the pilot union to either renegotiate, or if the contract is up and it's time to negotiate a new contract, to force it to give concessions. The airline can simply lay the black and red ink on the table and say, look, we can't stay in business without such concessions. And that generally has happened. As I said, there was a time when 70-seaters were barred. And even if you go back far enough, 50-seaters were even barred under many of these clauses. But competitive and financial pressures forced the barrier to keep being lifted upward.
If I understand correctly, the forecasts about pilot staffing over the next 20 years, it looks like pilots are very much going to be in the driver's seat in a lot of these negotiations. As the industry sees a lot of forced retirement due to age and a lot of the Vietnam era pilots getting out of the cockpit, is this going to stall this movement, or do you think they can still make progress?
Well, the number of new pilot starts is down. The mandatory retirement age of 60 years had a dramatic effect on this. It was recently raised to 65, so that'll ease the situation somewhat. But we will still see something of a shortage of pilots in the future. That will have an impact on the situation, but we still feel that there will come a time when these scope clauses are eased simply because of the economics that operate on airlines. It's such a cyclical business that there will come a point where the airlines will and the unions will be forced to come to some kind of compromise on the issue.
Well, Ray, listen, we really appreciate your taking a few minutes out to talk to our listeners today. Let me wish you a happy holidays, a great 2008, and keep batting in the 900s.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul.
My guest has been Ray Jarowski, who is a senior aerospace analyst for Forecast International. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. The Aero News special feature will take the week off next week for the holidays. We'll be back to welcome in the new year on Wednesday, January 2nd, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your holiday and have a clear and unlimited day.